chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, which we just read, but now I'm going to read it from the Message Bible. It says, "Do you see what this means? All these pioneers who blazed the way, all these veterans cheering us on. It means we'd better get on with it. Strip down, start running, and never quit. No extra spiritual fat, no parasitic sins. Keep your eyes on Jesus, who both began and finished this race we're in. Study how he did it, because he never lost sight of where he was headed, that exhilarating finish line in and with God. He could put up with anything along the way, cross, shame, whatever. And now he's there in the place of honor right alongside God. When you find yourselves flagging in your faith, go over that story again, item by item. That long litany of hostility he plowed through, that will shoot adrenaline into your souls." You know, there are themes within the Bible that repeat themselves, and since we're going through Hebrews and this is a theme, we're going to be repeating. But as I was thinking about it, the number of times that I have preached the message on enduring, continuing, on not turning away, not turning back. I remember very specifically the week after Easter a couple of years ago, the scripture that says that there was two of the apostles who were there with Jesus, and they saw everything that happened, and they turned and they went home. And they went home on the day he rose, and they missed it. And Jesus had to catch up to them. And the message at that point was, don't quit too soon. And the writer of Hebrews, Paul, is talking about, last time we talked about that cloud of witnesses of Abraham and Moses and all those witnesses who died without ever seeing the promise. Abraham was promised children as the sand on the beach, right? He never saw that. He never saw that. They saw from afar the promises, and somehow our generation has declared that if the promises aren't fulfilled in our time, therefore they're no longer true. And we walk away, and we don't want to walk away. We want to be encouraged. And in light of that great cloud of witnesses, all those who have gone before us, all those who submitted to God with only seeing the promise and the hope of the promise, but they persevered. Paul is saying to us, we too must persevere. And this cloud of witnesses that he had talked about in the previous chapter, and this cloud of witnesses that spurs us on, needs to spur us on to something. Or were they just there to encourage us? Are they just stories that we teach our kids because our kids want to know about David and Goliath? Or are they stories that God intended for us to be strong in our time of weakness? If you think you're going to live the Christian faith without having experienced times of doubt and fear and wonder, you're misguided. You're misguided. Because so much of Paul's writing is encouraging in those days. That must mean those days will reach all of us. And the point of these New Testament heroes for us is not to look upon them as some grandiose people that lived way back when and they just had it right with God. We're supposed to look at those people and say, I'm just like them and they are like me, and yet they endured and so can I and so can you. And yes, they died. They died with difficult things upon them. And never in their case saw any of the promises or most of the promises that we even still look forward to being fulfilled. They didn't see them, and yet they endured. And so they've left us a legacy to follow. a legacy to follow. And I know what goes on in the church, and I know that people are struggling in many and various ways. And the point is that you're not the first, you won't be the last, and you too can endure. But look to those of the past who did it. And the purpose of the story is to let us know that not all hardship is judgment. It's not always. It's the common lot of man to fall into hardship at some point or time or another. And so you and I, in light of that, are called by these witnesses to an action. Kendra, that Hebrews 12:1, we'll read it again. It says, "Therefore, since you are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin that clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race set before us." Folks, there is a race set before each one of us. A race. And racing is not passive. Racing is active. Paul is saying that cloud of witnesses is there to teach us, to help us, and to encourage us. But there's something that's causing us, maybe in your case, maybe not, but often there are things that cause us to have a problem in our race. In the NIV, it calls it every weight. Now, sin clings to us, or we cling to it. And we know the effects of sin. The effects of sin will trip us in our race, will cause us to fail in our race, to cause us to wander off course in our race. We know that. Sin is a detriment to running a good race, the spiritual life being the good race. But what about every weight? What are the hindrances in other translations? The things that trip us up. Not the things that are overtly sin, but the things that cause us difficulty. You see, sin is something that we would all look at, but never really spend a lot of time looking at hindrances or weights. And that word weight is intended. It's even the hindrances brings on this understanding of weight. Now, if you're not a runner or never have been a runner, then you're going to have to walk through this conversation. But Paul very often talks in terms of athletics. Athletes. Follow what athletes do. And one thing athletes don't do is go into a race wearing weights around their ankles or 40-pound packs upon their back. Now, you may do that in training, but Paul is talking about a race. You and I are in a race. We're in a spiritual race. We're in the race, our lives. Okay? And the reality is, folks, is that some of us have far too much weight on our back. That could be emotional, spiritual, even physical. I don't know about you, but I've got more stuff, and every time I think about it, I want to clear out something else, because all it does is trip me up when I go into my garage. It's all it does. And we know that in the physical, but how about in the spiritual? How about the transforming of our hearts and our minds? What does that mean? It means get rid of the stuff that causes us spiritual stumbling. Our traditions, our habits, our old ways, our thought patterns, or maybe our failings, maybe our lack of forgiving. How much weight do we carry by not forgiving someone? We're not forgiving ourselves. And every time we get into a situation where we have the weight, we can't run the race effectively. We can't do it. And now, so Paul is telling us once again, folks, think about the things that hinder you. Sin may be the problem, or just excess weight. And I got to tell you, from my point of view, the sin is obvious. The excess weight, that takes some effort to figure out sometimes. And maybe some effort to get rid of. I've seen commercials, you know, Home Advisor and commercials like that, or TV shows, where you see the carpenter wearing a weight belt. And it's clear to me that the people who put together the commercial have absolutely no idea what it is to carry that weight belt around. They must have some model standing there, and some guy says, all right, give me a bunch of tools. Yeah, we'll use that one, and we'll get that one, and we'll get that one. And they put tools all over this person. They say, how do you even get up a flight of stairs to do your job with all that weight on you? It's not possible, folks. I mean, every now and then, I have to dump out my tool bag because I don't want to carry the extra sawdust. That stuff weighs you down. At the end of the day, your legs are tired, your knees are tired. You've been going up them LBI houses with three stories up, you know. It's like up and down. And I know, God forbid, you got up there for the third time and you forgot something. But on the other hand, I'm not going to carry that something I don't need all day long. So we know what it is. I can identify. No carpenter in his right mind is going to work all day with them tools. And yet spiritually, we don't recognize within ourselves the things we don't need to carry any longer. Or we're too comfortable with it. Why do you carry that tool? I don't know. I've been carrying it for 20 years. I'd feel lopsided without it. I've been carrying that hate, that lack of forgiveness. I've been carrying my tradition. How's that tradition working out for you? I don't know. It's not doing anything for me, but it feels good. Folks, it's time we got rid of the weight. Are these things that we carry around really necessary? But even more importantly, you see, that's the sin. We know we got to get rid of sin. But ask yourself, this baggage I carry, does it help me? Could it ever possibly help me win the race? I would submit to you that a lack of forgiveness and mistrust and misunderstanding and abuse and all those things, they can never help you win a race. They may give you an excuse for failing at one, but not at winning it. And sometimes the toughest weight to recognize can be emotional baggage or internal stress. That's not where we're supposed to be. And we need to recognize, folks, that we have a race marked out for us. We are not here so we can live till tomorrow. What are you going to do tomorrow? Live till the next day. We're here to run a race. We're here to do something. And that race is marked out before us. And so the question for me is, what is my race? And the other question for me is, what is not my race? You see, I could be involved in a race that's not mine. I'm not prepared for it. And I'm going to lose that race. But if I run the race that's marked before me and you before you, then you will find the preparation you need for that race, the ability you need. And you don't have to waste your time running my race. or me yours. And we can run what we're called to run. Sprinters and long-distance runners are both competitors and they both run. But they prepare for a race very, very differently, even within the context of running. I never sprinted. I never trained like Kendra trained. Kendra hates anything over 100 meters. She did not do some of the things that I might have done. Hebrews 10:36 says, "For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised." Yeah, there are things that are promised. But they're promised at the end, when it's done. The race is never done because you say it is. We need to continue till the will of God is done. That's the end of the race. Not, I've endured this for a week, it's now over. Or 2 weeks, and it's now over. Or half my life, and it's now over. It's the will of God with endurance to the end, and then. No one ever is awarded the trophy at the halfway mark. It doesn't happen that way. And sometimes we consider, well, a race is a ministry or some sort of action. And it may well be. But a race may be more about things like obedience and patience and endurance in the very things that we are currently involved in. Jesus endured the cross. Some of us are enduring burdens or struggles. And for many of us, the race seems to be impossible. Now, I've run a couple of 5K races. We used to do it as a church. But what I found personally is always the same. At first, there's that anticipation. I wouldn't use the word excitement because running doesn't excite me, but I'll use that term loosely, at the beginning. And you have people there at the start line, which is very often the start-finish line. And they're there to cheer you on. And they're there to encourage you. And we'll see you in a few minutes or a few hours, depending on how you run. They're much like those witnesses. They kind of want to help you off, get started on that race. But after a few steps and not very long in time, the crowd thins out. And there's very few people that aren't at the start-finish line. And so within a few minutes, the cheering is quieted down and you're left with feet, both yourself and your competitor. And then you begin to get eventually to that place where your wind is starting to go. And your knees aren't really warmed up enough. And so they're starting to hurt. And you say to yourself, why did I sign up for this? I don't remember. And as time goes on, you begin to doubt what you're doing. And the pain increases. And you begin to think seriously about quitting. And it's in those places that you need a marker. You need to come across the place in a 5K race, maybe it's the half mile point. A marker that says where you're at. And in my case, I look at the half-mile marker and say, well, if I'm going to quit, I'm not going to quit at half a mile. I'll wait till a mile. Markers are give us an idea where we're at. And when I get to the mile marker, well, that's barely any better than the half mile marker, so I'm going to keep going. And when I get to the mile and a half marker, well, in a 5K race, I'm halfway there. I can't quit now. And we use these things emotionally, and this cloud of witnesses were there to, like they went before us to all these marks, these places. And Hebrews said that Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, the one who began the race, we can look at those markers and say, Jesus passed that marker. And if Jesus passed that marker and he endured, then I will endure. And I'll maybe meet Jesus at the next marker and maybe quit then, but I won't quit at this one because Jesus passed that way. And what happens with me when I get into a race is that at every marker up to the halfway point, I'm beginning to say, I got to quit. There's no sense in quitting at the end. You might as well quit at the beginning, but the closer I get, and then past the halfway point, I can't quit now. And the marker that we have laid before us, the author and finisher of our faith, is now closer to me than he ever was. And I need to keep going to get to that place. Heather remembers the year she ran. We ran together for a while, and I just kept lying to her. She kept saying, you know, well, I got to walk. She wasn't going to quit, but I got to walk. Well, let's not quit until a mile and a half, or a mile, and then a mile and a half. And we get to the mile and a half. No, it was before the halfway point. Drew Overgaard, pastor of Cedar Run, was up there. I said, Heather, you can't walk in front of Drew. He'll never let you down. And so we got up to the turnaround point where he was and got our water, and she said, all right, I got to walk now. I said, yeah, but he's going to see you from behind. Then we made the turn. She said, all right, he can't see me from here. I said, yeah, but we're at the 2-mile mark. I don't want to quit when other people are seeing me, and I certainly don't want to quit when I see the Lord, because there's a place where you're headed. You're getting closer to the finish mark, and you can see it. What happens when you get close to the finish line, when you've seen it? If you've never run a race, let me tell you, for me, once it's in sight, there is no way I'm quitting. No way I'm walking now. I may crawl, but I'm not walking. But in our case, Jesus is waiting. He's marking the finish line for us. He's saying, it's here. I made it first. And I want you to follow me. And so what happens is our bodies are exhausted. Our lungs are burning. Our knees are hurting. But there's something that transforms us in seeing him. We must fix our eyes upon the author and finisher of our faith. Because it's not that the pain goes away. It becomes less important. Because I have a mark. He's standing there waiting for me. And there's an energy that comes within the body again. And while you're totally exhausted and in pain, you can make that. Jesus finished the race and he's standing there. That's why he's the author and finisher. He set the course. He laid down the markers. And he's waiting for us. We are not close enough, some of us, to our end to be able to see him yet. The struggles we're facing have a long way to go to play out to their end. and we can't see him. And it may be the mile point where you say, I'm no longer being cheered on by the crowd. It could be that I'm not prepared for this. Whatever. Go on to the next marker. And eventually we'll get to the place where we'll be so close to the end and we'll start to see him. And we'll say, I don't know where I'm going to get the energy, but I will not quit now. First Corinthians chapter 9, verse 24. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Now, if I enter a 5K race and there's two of us, I still don't expect to win. Okay? I was in one 5K race where a 67-year-old man beat me. Okay? But I do enter races with the intention of finishing and finishing well. Finishing well is not me beating you. Finishing well is doing the best I can do. It's an amazing thing about races. Only one receives the prize. That's absolutely true. But if you've run your best race, and you've exhausted yourself, there is a pride that comes with that. And pride may, I may have, should choose a better word, but hopefully you know what I mean. We're not proud people. But I can tell you, in looking up some, you know, pictures for this morning, and I saw one of three women crossing the start finish line with the tape in front of them, and their hair was perfect, and they were smiling, and their hands were held together in the air. And I said, you didn't run a race. Because if they had run a race, it would have been maybe a fleeting smile, and their hair wouldn't have been perfect, and there would have been sweat on their bodies. The image of that picture was so, like, that's the kind of race we think we're running in life. Where all we have to do is show up in our running clothes and go like this for a picture at the start-finish line. Folks, we've got a race to run. And it can be long, and it can be hard, and it's going to be painful, and it's going to be difficult. And at the end, when God says, that's the end of the race, his will, we will see the prize. So don't come to the race of life with your fancy doodad running clothes and your little bonnet bought just for the race and expect that you've done all that's going to be required. Ephesians 4:22 says, put off your old selves, which belongs to the former manner of life and is corrupted through deceitful desires. This putting off of the old self is a removing of the weight and the hindrances of what used to be in my life. If you're a couch potato, you got to put away the couch in order to run. The old way isn't going to get you the new way. Get rid of the weight. And this old way of living will not get us through the middle point of the race successfully. You know, for me, the toughest part of any race is the middle. The toughest part of any job is the middle. And when I get to the middle of the race, I'm in enough pain that I'm saying to myself, I'm glad I didn't wear those leg weights. It's going to be hard enough to get through. when those difficult miles become engaged, the weights will be a constant burden. Are you so entrenched in your habits and your traditions or your comfortable ways that you can no longer hear the call to remove them? Do we carry weight that's causing us to fail in the very things we desire to change? Hebrews 12:11 says this, "No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained in it." Now, discipline, we know discipline. Discipline is a corrective action. We think of discipline right away as a judgment. I'm being punished. But discipline is important for athletes, for those who are running. Go to 9, Kendra. You see, we're going to call this the midpoint of the race. The cloud of witnesses is gone. The finish line is not visible. And you're in the middle by yourself in many cases. If you went off course, no one would know. If you quit, no one would care. But this is the place where discipline is required. No one requires discipline to run in front of the crowd, but all of us require discipline to run here. This is discipline that comes from God as well. It's the discipline that a coach builds into its team, into his athletes. Because long-distance running coaches know that at some point, their runners are out of their sight and out of their hearing range. He doesn't know what they're doing, and they don't know what he's doing. And in that place, you have to go internally in order to continue going physically. You can't listen for your coach to cheer you on. And Paul, like God, would say, train like athletes that when you get to that difficult, lonely place, you remember all of the discipline training that you had. That's what carries you through the middle, quiet, difficult parts of the course. At least, that's for me. Next one, Kendra. Paul uses this. If you could imagine Paul as the guy in green, the coach, saying to us, listen up, you need the discipline. You have a cloud of witnesses, you have the discipline, you have me. You have me as your coach. But there's going to be a place where I can't run alongside of you, but know that I'm pulling for you. Know that I care for you. Know that at the end of the race, when you can't see the end of the race, your Lord is standing there. He is marking the place where he wants you to be, the finish line. Know that. Know that. Because you're going to get to that place. And you have a coach, but he's waiting for you at the end of the race, wanting you to fall upon the disciplines that you were taught to get you through that lonely middle. And I know we could argue from Scripture that Jesus is always with us and in us. I'm using an athletic event, okay, as the example, trying to make an example. Because I know the middle of the race is when I'm struggling the most. Coaches teach runners how to run, but they also teach them how to keep running. If I were a coach this morning, I would say, You're old enough, all old enough to know how to run, but do you know how to keep running? If you're struggling today, know that we, your family, your church, are like the cloud of witnesses, and we desire for you to finish and finish well. Some of us have experienced making it through some of those tough times, and we would say to you, keep running. One foot in front of the other. Keep running. And if you're at a place where you're not hearing our voices, then you have to draw upon the disciplines you were taught. God is real. I don't feel him. The discipline is, he's real. God's not hearing me. The discipline is, God hears you always and everywhere. God's not answering. You're not hearing. You're in the place where you need to keep going. Doubt is coming. Keep running. I can't run your race. You can't run mine. But I can help you through encouraging you. And if I get opportunity, I'm going to mark the trail for you. Hopefully my life and your life together, our lives together, will mark trails for each other. The marks that will encourage us on. But the ultimate example is the life of Christ. He finished well, and he's calling us to the finish line. So keep running. And there will come a time. There will come a time when you glimpse him in the distance. And then you need one discipline. One discipline. Run to the author and finisher of our faith. Just fix your eyes on him. Make it to the end. Why is a conversation like this so broad and so filled with metaphors? Because you may be running a totally different race than I am. The application has to be there. You need to draw upon whatever experience you have. Why do runners run before the race? It's discipline. It's to build up endurance. And it's experience. See, if you've experienced being winded, then being winded doesn't make you afraid. If you know that every time you run, your knees hurt, you won't worry about it. My experience tells me this is going to happen. See what I'm saying? I know people I speak to in the church and out. I'm talking across broad spectrums. A lot of people in that place, on that trail by themselves, saying, is this all for real? And we, like coaches, need to come alongside and say, yep, yep. Another half mile, you'll see it. Another mile, you'll see it. It's all real. Just keep going. Just keep going. I think that's what Paul was trying to say. I think so. He's trying to tell us from the distance. It's going to be a difficult road ahead. Keep running. us to learn from the discipline that means we're consistent and we're faithful in what we do, so that when we're in those trails of life that we can no longer hear the crowd behind and we cannot see our Lord in front, that we continue to do what we know to do, so that in the end we have the reward. Some of us may be under the discipline which is corrective. Help us to submit to that, that we would never walk the wrong road, that wrong road again. Father, would you teach us your ways and your precepts, that we would never be alone, that your word would speak to us and urge us on. And Lord, it is very easy to want the prize in the middle of the race. Help us to endure. Receive the righteous praise. In Jesus' name.